Support for Untangled on WOSU comes from the James at Ohio State, where patients choose access to the most advanced cancer treatments, available from the team who specializes in treating just one type of cancer, yours. You didn't choose cancer, but the choice of where to treat it is clear. The James at Ohio State.
Welcome to Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU that takes a complicated topic and untangles it for you, pulls it apart, and weaves the facts back together in ways that are easy to understand. I'm your host, Anna Staber. This season, we've been untangling redistricting in Ohio. Redistricting is the process of drawing electoral boundaries, and while the topic might have put you to sleep in high school civics, it's a building block of our democracy. Drawing districts for our state house and Congress does more than determine which lawmakers represent which groups of people. It determines who controls our government, what kind of laws we have on abortion, education, taxes. Our districts become our destiny. And this November, Ohioans will decide who gets to draw them. Issue 1 would change the way redistricting works, taking control of the map-making from our politicians and giving it to Ohioans who have never run for public office.
Let the citizens do it, not the politicians. Exactly what this measure does. It makes no sense to most people that politicians would be drawing their own districts. The bias is so blatantly obvious.
Opponents say it's not that simple.
Look, it's a horrible idea. I'll start out with that. When you try and take politics out of an inherently political process, you end up with worse problems.
Today, we're untangling issue 1, what it would do and the reasons why you would want to vote yes or no. Before we get into it, we need to know what is in the proposed amendment. So I'm going to give you a quick overview. Issue 1 would create a 15-member redistricting commission. 5 people would be registered Republican, 5 people would be Democrats, 5 would be unaffiliated, and none of them could be a former politician, lobbyist, or political consultant. If you're wondering who's going to pick these people, the answer is retired judges. They would narrow down the applicants and choose 6 members, 2 from each of the groups. Then those 6 would pick the other 9, and you'd get 15 members. That's how the commission would be set up. Now let's talk about how it would work. Issue 1 says mapmakers could not look at where lawmakers live. Instead, they would create maps that closely correspond to recent statewide election results. It's called proportionality, and it means if Republicans win 55% of the vote in Ohio on average, 55% of our seats should lean red. The commissioners would also have to keep communities of interest together. We talked a lot about those in Episode 3. The amendment requires multiple public hearings before and after maps are drafted, and at least 2 Republicans, 2 Democrats, and 2 independents have to vote for them. Now that we have a basic understanding of Issue 1, let's talk about the reasons to vote yes or vote no. Republican State Senator Rob McCauley opposes Issue 1. He thinks Ohioans should vote no, and he joins us now. Senator McCauley, welcome to Untangled.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And if you're wondering why the no campaign is going first, the simple answer is Senator McCauley has a plane to catch and asked if he could go first. So there's nothing nefarious afoot. We're just putting him first because he asked. Let's start with the makeup of this proposed commission. What do you like about it? What do you dislike about it?
Well, looking at the way that it's made up, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, 5 independent voters, I think on paper, it's something that would be appealing to a lot of people. But I think you have to look at really how it's constructed, how it works. This election process is nothing short of convoluted. The eligibility criteria are very convoluted as well, to the point where if you are the family member of an elected official, or even if you are an appointed officer of the government. And so appointed officers can be interpreted to be pretty broad. And so to the fact where if you are an appointed officer of the police, for example, or a fire department, or if you're in the military because it covers federal and state, you could potentially be ineligible to serve on the commission. Another thing that I don't really like about it through the decision-making process is our current constitution requires that if we were to pass a 10-year map that would last for the entire decade after the census, we would be required to have bipartisan approval to get that map in place, which is something we did in the most recent round of redistricting. However, this current proposal doesn't require bipartisanship out of the committee. It simply requires 9 out of 15 votes. And so voters need to be aware that this isn't going to necessarily result in more bipartisanship because it's not required to. In fact, it's very likely that one party could control the entire process based on how it's set up.
Let's talk about how the commissioners get selected. They are selected by a group of judges, and well, they pick 6, and then 6 pick the other 9, and then you get 15. What do you make of the application process?
Well, I think the application process, while it's designed to air out some of the concerns that people might have to try and show some sort of impartiality as far as political giving and whatnot, I think it's still something that is very convoluted. It's something where in order to get through the process, and this is something that we've tried to highlight, there's 14 or 15 steps just to get through the whole thing. Something that most voters are going to look at and say, because there is a flow chart out there that you may have seen, most voters would look at it and I think they'd say, wow, that's pretty exhaustive process that would be hard for a lot of people to understand. I think the bigger concern for a lot of people is the accountability for this, in that once these commissioners are put on the commission, there's no way for them to be removed except by a vote of their fellow commissioners. And so, for example, if a commissioner were to have violated the Constitution through lying on their materials, or they were found to otherwise have been ineligible to serve on the commission, or maybe there was a discrepancy in the data that they provided, there would be no way to hold them accountable other than through a fellow commission vote. You couldn't even challenge something like this in court to make sure that the commissioner that had misrepresented their qualifications was held accountable. And that's something that I think is lacking oversight.
So like in Arizona, for example, which we touched on in our last episode, when we looked at how other states with independent commissions have them, you would have wanted to see the legislature there can remove commission members.
Not necessarily. I think it's logical whenever we're having an institution or rather an instance that is dealing with our Constitution, that there be a judicial remedy. After all, the judicial branch is what is responsible for interpreting our Constitution, for interpreting our statutes, and for really calling balls and strikes at the end of the day. And if the judicial branch is completely left out of a potential remedy for a violation of the Constitution, which I'm sure we can get to later with Article 8 of this amendment or proposed amendment, I think that's a problem that most voters should be aware of.
The final question I have for you about the commission itself is there's this argument out there from those who want us to vote no, is what it might cost Ohio taxpayers. So the amendment says the General Assembly must give the commission $7 million to do its work. And look, that's a lot of money for you or for me, life-changing amount of money, but that's pocket change in the context of a state budget. So what is the concern about the money?
It's pocket change in the context of the state budget, I suppose. I suppose you could characterize it as that. I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as that, having reviewed a number of budgetary amendments. But $7 million, I can tell you from having sat on the redistricting commission, the one that delivered a bipartisan unanimous map, $7 million is way more money than you would need. Hmm. I can assure you of that. It's not that, though, that really also adds to the cost. It's the fact that the legal expenses and some of the other expenses associated with this is basically a blank check by the plain language of the constitutional proposed amendment, in that there would be no checks and balances over how much money got spent once you got to that level. And so you could potentially have a runaway expense in this instance, where we as the legislature would be forced to vote on something to appropriate these funds outside of what we would normally provide oversight of, which arguably is a separation of powers violation in and of itself. And so that's what leads the people who are pushing the no vote to take a careful look at this. On its face, an independent commission is probably appealing to a lot of voters. But when you get down into the details and you have the lack of accountability associated with these commissioners, and then you have the costliness potentially of the commission itself, we routinely have conversations about, well, wouldn't there be a better use of that $7 million? Or wouldn't there be a better use of that $1 million? And in this case, I can assure you, when there are no checks and balances on spending, it could very well lead to a runaway spending authority.
Didn't the state pay for the legal fees in 2021 and 2022, though?
They did, as defending a decision by the state and the commission. However, that was not $7 million. I can assure you of that.
Yeah, I want to move on to the map-making process itself. What do you think of the proportionality requirement? Because that's the item that's getting the most attention.
So if I asked you and all your voters, or if we were in a, or listeners, rather, if I asked you and all your listeners, let's define gerrymandering. There'd be a variety of different definitions, but two central core concepts that would be in each definition probably would be drawing districts, each district to favor one party over the other, or it would be splitting apart communities or boundaries of political subdivisions or whatever the case may be, purely for political advantage. I think that would be a universally agreed upon definition of gerrymandering. This actually, by its plain construction of the way the amendment is set up, actually almost requires that. And that's where voters need to be aware. So 6B of the proposed constitutional amendment. So Article 6 deals with how you draw a map. 6A says you have to comply with the Voting Rights Act, which you would no matter whether we're
that's
in
federal
the Constitution
law, you get
or not.
No choice.
So 6B is the primary map drawing criteria. And the sole criteria in 6B is that they be drawn to that to not favor a political party over the other. And it says the proportionality. You got to take the state and divide it into statewide vote preference over one party over the other. And so inherently, if you're trying to meet that political ratio, and that is the sole criteria of the primary, sole primary criteria, inherently you're drawing every single district to say, this will be a Republican or Democrat district when we are done, because we have to meet the ratio at the end. 6C then deals with communities not being split. It deals with even population. And the language of 6C says 6C cannot trump 6B. So let's think about that. Population, equality in population among districts.
Isn't there a federal decision on that, though? The one
for
person,
congressional
one...
districts, not for state legislative districts. So one person, one vote. Again, federal law requires that we go down to the person in our representation. So that's why in
and
some
there's a little wiggle room because we can't do it perfectly. But
well, we at least in the state have gone down to within one person because sometimes you get odd numbers in your population.
Yeah. I mean, if like two districts are 200 or 300 people different, it's not a huge difference, but it's you want to get them as close to even as possible.
Our state constitution right now requires there be a 5% buffer. That was something that the voters mm-hmm. put in place in the 2015 amendment for state legislative districts. This says they must be reasonably equal. Any lawyer will tell you reasonably without it being defined means whatever it means to the beholder of that viewpoint. But the fact that it's a secondary criteria to the political ratio and the fact that Article 8, which we referenced before, the judicial challenge of these things, you can't even bring a claim that districts don't have the right population in the Ohio Supreme Court. That's a problem that voters need to be aware of.
Another concern raised by opponents is minority representation. So we actually had some lawmakers from Michigan who have a very similar process. It's not exactly the same as issue one, but it's close. And they got into a little bit of trouble with 13 districts around Detroit. They had to go redraw them. We covered that all in the last episode, so I'm not going to rehash that. But essentially, there were Michigan Democrats who came down here and said, hey, you should be careful because you may lose black legislators.
It's because the Michigan system, similar to this one, let the tail wag the dog. Rather than drawing districts, look, districts are contained with communities, the people who live in them and their unique interests and their unique issues that come up. And so they're not necessarily made up solely for political outcomes, where this language and the language in Michigan would make it, as I detailed before, solely about what is the political outcome of that district relative to the statewide voting percentage? Every district would have to be assigned as a Republican or Democrat district. And so in Michigan, if you're going to draw these districts based on political outcomes, if I had a map in front of you of the state of Ohio and it were color-coded by precinct, it would be a sea of red with islands of blue. For Democrat precincts. And those islands of blue, as you might imagine, are going to be in the cities.
Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, around Dayton.
I listened to your previous podcast on this, and so I know this has been discussed a little bit about political geography. And so if you're drawing 120,000-person House districts, 360,000-person Senate districts, 786,000-person congressional districts, there's only so many portions of the state geographically that you can draw those districts. And you need large clusters of those blue precincts on that map to draw majority Democrat districts. So what that forces a map maker to do under those circumstances, and this is what they did in Michigan, is they went into these clusters of precincts and they said, how do we maximize the number of Democrat districts out of these this cluster of precincts? We either have to have a whole lot of 55% or 60+% precincts, or if we can pair those precincts with 85% or 90% Democrat precincts, then we need fewer of those 55 or 60% precincts. And so they went into those clusters of 85 and 90% Democrat precincts, and they cracked them up into as many districts as they could. Those were the high-value precincts. Well, who lives in those 85 or 90% precincts? Oftentimes, it's minorities who live there. And so the federal court in the Michigan example actually said, struck down the maps there and said, this is actually a racial gerrymander. You deprived the African-American community of the ability to have majority-minority districts under the Voting Rights Act, and therefore this map must be struck down.
I will say, though, that the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus here in Ohio has endorsed Issue 1. So we'll have to wait and see how that all shakes out. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how redistricting went the last go around and what kind of laws gerrymandering produces. That's when Untangled continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU that takes a complicated topic and untangles it for you. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're untangling redistricting this season, and we've arrived at Issue 1, the constitutional amendment we're all going to vote for or vote against come November. We're talking with Republican Senator Rob McCauley about why he thinks you should vote no. And I want to ask, how do you think the redistricting process went the last time we drew maps?
If we're talking about the 2023 redistricting process, I think it went well. The system worked the way that it was supposed to work. And so for the listeners who may not be aware of all of this, 2023, we had to go into a second cycle of redistricting for the state legislative districts. And the maps actually, were put into a room, Republicans and Democrats, and we went through a bipartisan process where there were good negotiations that occurred. There were trade-offs across the map, and it ended up being what I would classify as a good compromises across the map, and it resulted in a unanimous bipartisan vote among the commissioners, something that people didn't really know was possible. And so I guess the only reason I bring that up, and look, I'm not trying to convince people on this episode that, you know, the system we have is the greatest system possible. But I would bring that up only to say that the system we have has worked the way it was supposed to work in the most recent instance with a bipartisan unanimous vote.
I asked House Minority Leader Alison Russo about that, and here's what she had to say about why she voted yes for those maps.
And so our vote, and I've said this from the beginning, I said it during the commission, I wrote about it, spoke about it extensively, was not because I believe that those maps are in any way fair or that they reflect the will of the people. That vote was simply to remove the pen from this commission and not allow them to redraw them again in 2 years. Because at that point, we did not know if the citizen-led commission would be qualified for the ballot yet. And we would again be subject to another round of redistricting that could put us in a position to have even worse maps than what we have now.
So Minority Leader Russo says she only voted yes to stop you guys from drawing it again, not because she liked them.
I would say, with all due respect to Minority Leader Russo, that is political posturing for the public. I was in those rooms negotiating directly with her and Minority Leader Antonio from the Senate. And there are compromises riddled throughout that map. The Democrats, if they do run good campaigns with their candidates, as is a requirement to win any election, there's a likelihood that they will pick up seats this cycle. Not supposed to say that, but you know, I'll say it anyway. There's a likelihood that they'll pick up seats. And that's because we recognize the compromises that were reasonable. It was a bipartisan negotiation to try and reach what would be a map for the rest of the decade, because we thought that that was important. And that's what the voters asked us to do when they put this process in place.
One of the big complaints about gerrymandering is that it creates lawmakers who are not accountable to the people they serve, that politicians pass laws that don't reflect what the people want. And one of the arguments we've heard throughout this series is that just look at abortion, look at issue one, right? Ohio passed a law banning almost all abortion at 6 weeks, but 58% of the voters voted for a Roe standard, that the legislature was way more conservative than the people of the state of Ohio.
Well, I think when you look at, again, the way that we draw maps in the state, because in one of your previous podcasts, it was said, some of these representatives or senators or congressmen or women aren't really worried about their general election. Well, one thing you need to be, I guess, aware of when we're looking at the map, remember the example I gave earlier. Ohio, if we color-coded the precincts, is a sea of red, a sea of red with islands of blue. And there's only so many parts of the state where you can even draw majority Democrat districts. And so inherently, and the inverse is true as well, you could not draw majority Republican districts
in
certain parts of the state. Exactly. And so inherently, especially at the House district level and the Senate district level, there are going to be a number of districts that must be safe, especially under our redistricting criteria that mandate that we can't split certain political subdivisions. There are certain parts of the state that are going to be safe no matter what. Otherwise, the map would look very gerrymandered. And so there's going to inherently be a number of competitive districts in between. Historically, in those competitive districts, Republicans have performed pretty well. In fact, there are a number of districts on the map right now that are Democrat districts that Republicans currently hold the seat. And that's something that, you know, when you run good campaigns with good candidates and you run on good issues, sometimes you're going to win a district that you shouldn't win on paper. And so I wouldn't necessarily say that gerrymandering is responsible for the supermajorities that Republicans have. I would say it's more as a result of the voting trends of the state of Ohio and really in those swing districts, what issues are important to those voters.
Governor Mike DeWine likes how Iowa does its redistricting, and we explained how map making in the Hawkeye State worked last week. So I want to ask, what do you think of Iowa? And since you're expected to be the next Senate president next year, it's not official yet, but it looks that way, you have a lot of sway over what comes to the floor, what legislation gets voted on. So is this something that you would be interested in looking at, redistricting reform?
So the Iowa model, as I understand it, is an independent commission, but it's also by the map drawing criteria. And we covered this map drawing criteria in this amendment, and that 6B would say that the political outcome of each district or the map and the map as a whole would be the primary drawing criteria. But Iowa actually prioritizes the traditional definitions of gerrymandering and getting rid of those, as we discussed earlier, and that it requires that communities be kept together and that certain political subdivisions not be split excessively. And that's what I think most voters would traditionally associate with gerrymandering. And so if given the time to discuss that, and if given the opportunity to look at an Iowa plan and really evaluate it, I do think that's something we would look at in the next General Assembly.
Final question. What is your elevator pitch to voters? Why should Ohioans vote no on issue one?
I think the voters need to look at the language itself and be aware of what's in it. And while an independent commission may seem on the surface like something that is a good idea, and it may very well be a good idea, It's the mechanics of how this would work that is the reason people should vote no. Number one, the commission itself is unaccountable to the voters, and in fact can only be removed by their fellow commissioners, not even by a court, if it's determined that they're ineligible. The costliness of the commission could be excessive in that the legislature basically has to give the commission a blank check in many respects to be able to conduct its duties, and the minimum amount that's funded is excessive to what they would need. And I could tell you that from having been on a redistricting commission. But beyond that, you look at the criteria. This isn't banning gerrymandering. It's actually instilling gerrymandering into our Constitution, and in that the sole primary criteria for drawing districts is going to be drawing districts based on a political ratio. In order to meet that political ratio, you have to go into every single district and say, is this going to be a Republican district or is this going to be a Democrat district? All the other criteria are secondary. It actually says it in the plain language of the Constitution. 6C says all these other criteria are absolutely secondary. They cannot interfere with the political ratio, and you can't even bring a challenge in the Ohio Supreme Court for failing to meet a secondary criteria, including equality of population in districts, which should be offensive to every Ohio voter. For those reasons, the voters of Ohio need to become very well versed on this and realize that even if you want an independent commission, this is not the way to do it.
That was Republican Senator Rob McCauley. Thank you for joining us on Untangled.
Thank you.
Now it's time to explore why you might want to vote yes on issue one. And for that conversation, we have Jen Miller, president of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Welcome back to Untangled, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start in the same place with you as I did with Senator McCauley, the commission itself.
Yeah.
Opponents of the measure say elected officials should retain redistricting because they're more accountable to the people. We can vote them out of office. They say we can't vote these commissioners out. So what do you make of that? How do we get rid of commissioners? How do they get vetted?
So the bottom line is what we're doing through Citizens Not Politicians is getting rid of those folks who have a self-interest in the process. So when we bring in everyday Ohioans, that can include policemen, firefighters, military, teachers, steelworkers, faith leaders, all walks of life, their goal isn't going to be, can I make sure that the lines are drawn in a way that me and my friends can win over and over again? Their goal is going to be to work together in a tripartisan fashion, Republican, Democrat, and Independent, to create lines that truly keep communities together and represent folks fairly. Who's not allowed, again, are those folks that have a self-interest right now in that process, career politicians, lobbyists, party leaders, or their family members.
There's also a prohibition on running for office for 6 years after serving on the commission.
Right, exactly.
So this concern about how we get rid of members of the commission, do you have reservations about the idea that they're going to self-police?
I do not. So first and foremost, the pollution of the creation of district lines, what is polluting that? What is making these lines unfair? What's making these districts look so weird where they slice and dice communities and then combine entirely different communities together in these weird sprawling districts? It's actually the politicians who are polluting this process and making sure that they win over and over again and that we, the people, are not fairly represented. So I'm not concerned about that. I will say that there are ways to vote out commissioners, and there are very strict rules for the commission. I think one of the most important is that everything has to be done transparently. And I can share with you that many aspects of the last round of mapping and all the rounds of mapping before that were not done in the public eye. Like what data we use, what mapping software we use, all of these kinds of things, that, as well as why they're drawing the lines the way they are. All of that has to be done in the public eye. And we know that sunshine can really protect Ohioans and the people of, you know, any voting, any group of voters from corruption.
When it comes to how much the commission will cost Ohio taxpayers, your opponents have a lot to say. They say, quote, issue one grants these unelected commission members virtually unlimited power to spend Ohio tax dollars with no control by Ohio voters. So I guess how did you land on $7 million for the commission? And like, what do you have to say to somebody who's like, this is going to be a blank check?
Well, look, Ohio voters will not be paying millions and millions of dollars of tax money to litigate and relitigate gerrymandered maps. Let's remember that the people who are telling us this refused to listen to the Ohio Supreme Court seven times. And that took a lot of government dollars to defend these unconstitutional maps. So the commission is funded similarly to other commissions in the state. And the cost will not be, there won't be a blank check because we won't be litigating over and over and over again. And more importantly, is let's invest in our democracy. Let's have districts that function fairly so that our governance actually works. Right now, we have a dysfunctional Congress and a dysfunctional Ohio State House, and that has a lot to do with gerrymandering. So if we end gerrymandering, that's going to help all of us economically anyway.
I want to talk about how the map-making process will work. First, I want to talk about these mandatory public hearings. You have a couple that are required before a map is drawn, a couple that are required after the maps are drawn. Why did you want to add so many public meetings?
So I think what's most important here, and we saw this in 2011 and we saw this in 2021, they did a, quote, roadshow where they went all around the state and thousands of people showed up to testify. But there was no map to even look at. And even deeper in the process, when the hearings were only in Columbus, our testimony was due 24 hours in advance of the hearing. But we didn't even have a map 24 hours in advance of a hearing. And when we finally did get it, it was a PDF, which means you can't really analyze what's going on. You can't see the lines between, say, Grandview and Upper Arlington. So the public has been shut out of the processes. The backroom deals has been the name of the game. And this proposal really thinks about how to make sure that the voice of the people is heard throughout the entire process and that we're not wasting people's time showing up to testify, which they'll do because they care about ending gerrymandering in the state, but that this way they'll actually see the maps in advance and they can comment on them in great detail.
The current map-making process restricts how often cities and counties can be split, but that criteria wasn't included in this amendment. Why not put that limit into this version?
Because thank you for that. The politicians use those split rules to justify gerrymandering. We are working on something far more important, which is that communities of interest, that the mappers have to listen to the people of Ohio about how they want to be represented. And so the testimony will be much more rich in detail, in part because the voters will see those maps in advance before testimony. But also, we will build based on communities of interest. So that could include school districts. It could include counties. Right now, we have a number of situations where communities are being cut for no other reason but partisan goals. So, for example, Junaid and Hutton in District 6 is 1,200 people. That would fit into a congressional district 659 times in terms of population, but it's split. Why? There's only one reason for partisan outcomes, to make sure that certain lawmakers can win over and over again. That's what will not happen in this process.
We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to untangle proportionality and where Issue 1 gets its campaign cash. That's when Untangled continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to Untangled. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about redistricting and whether Ohio should change the rules for drawing our state and federal districts this November. The amendment is known as Issue 1, and Ohio League of Women Voters President Jen Miller thinks we should all vote yes. So, Jen, when it comes time for the commission to make these maps, the amendment says the districts should reflect how Ohio votes as a state. If Republicans win 55% of the vote, they should be favored in 55% of the districts. Opponents say this is gerrymandering. This is creating fixed outcomes. What is your response?
Okay, so first off, there are several criteria for mapping. Maps cannot benefit a political party or a politician, which is what we have right now. They have to be geographically contiguous. They need to comply with the U.S. Constitution and the Federal Voting Rights Act. What we're talking about is right now, one of the easiest ways to measure gerrymandering is to look at the number of votes or percentage of votes that a party receives and the number of seats or percentage of seats that they hold. So, for example, right now in the Ohio House, Republicans won about 58% of the vote, but they have 68% of the seats. And Senator Rob McCauley, part of the reason why he likes the way we do it now is because he and his friends are winning. Republicans won about 59% of the votes for Senate, but hold almost 80% of the seats. When you see that mismatch, what it helps you understand is that they had a clear goal in mind, which was to go house by house, neighborhood by neighborhood, community by community, and figure out how folks are voting so that they could create district lines that benefit them and their friends.
So would proportionality be the number one thing above all else, the way
No.
it was framed? Okay.
No.
Why not?
Because, again, it says that these maps have, like, the districts have to be contiguous, that they have to comply with the U.S. Constitution and the Federal Voting Rights Act. And then we look at proportional fairness. They also have to know district lines can be drawn to favor a party or a candidate.
So when it comes to how the Ohio Supreme Court would be involved in this process, the current system bans the court from drawing maps, but this system would allow them some map-making authority. Why make this change?
Well, I mean, I think we saw it. So first off, let's keep in mind that it was the lawmakers who made the 2015 and 2018 standards. It was the lawmakers who decided that the Supreme Court of Ohio should be the final judge of maps. But then it was the lawmakers who and politicians who over and over and over again ignored the Supreme Court orders a total of 7 times. If the Supreme Court had had the ability had some ability to change and manipulate the maps, if they had that explicit ability in the Constitution, we wouldn't have been in this merry-go-round. So the idea is, if the Supreme Court knocks down the maps because of partisan gerrymandering, because of unfairness to voters, that they can fix those maps if the commission does not.
And they would hire these special masters, 2 of them, right?
Yeah. So and a lot of states use special masters. We saw the special masters kind of in play in the last round when finally the Supreme Court suggested to the commission that they should hire a Republican and Democrat mapper. And it was so fun for at least us nerds, where we got to see them in real time making decisions about how the maps were drawn. Those maps were much The districts were more more compact. They were more fair. And at the last minute, the politician commissioners pulled out a different map that was just as gerrymandered as those before it.
Let's talk about Michigan. So Michigan has a similar process to what's being proposed here in Ohio. There are some differences, but we talked about those last week, so I don't want to reiterate them. But the first time their commission drew maps, a federal court said 13 of their districts violated the Voting Rights Act. Essentially, they had drawn districts that disenfranchised minority voters. Now, opponents of Issue 1 say that will happen here, that mapmakers will need to draw districts that spiral out into the suburbs to meet this proportionality requirement.
Yeah, okay. So first and foremost, our proposal is not the same as Michigan. It's great that there are states that have gone before us so we can learn from them, but this is an Ohio solution to an Ohio problem. Secondly, Citizens Not Politicians was written In consultation with the NAACP and the A. Philip Randolph Institute and a wide range of civil rights leaders, and it's supported by civil rights leaders from across the state. So what I would say is they had, here's another piece, they had one lawsuit, right, one round, and they got it fixed. I don't even think we're going to need that one round here because we have changed our policy.
Would you say they just got bad advice?
I think that they might not have, they have a random selection, and I think maybe they just didn't have enough folks who understood the Detroit area, but that's not our selection process.
Let's talk about the campaign itself. Citizens, Not Politicians. There's been lots of allegations about dark money and out-of-state cash. About $6 million for this campaign came from a group called the 1630 Fund. It's a progressive organization that gets a lot of money from this Swiss billionaire named Hans-Jörg Weiss, if I said that correctly. He lives in Wyoming, and I want to play a cut from Ohio Auditor Keith Faber.
And this organization is not apolitical. It has a very clear political leftist bent. They're all funded by the same funders. They all have the same support. And because they're not putting elected officials on there, doesn't mean they're not putting political people on there. I ask a rhetorical question. Who wants to serve on a redistricting commission if you have no interest in politics or no interest in political outcomes? Good luck finding people who have that model. They're not going to go out and just draft people from the citizenry.
So there's like two different things to unpack there from what Faber said. The first is that this organization, 1630, and Citizens Not Politicians, he's saying by default, are not apolitical, that they have a leftist bent.
Well, I mean, let me just say this. The League of Women Voters of Ohio has fought Republicans and Democrats against gerrymandering. So you can listen to career politicians who have their power because of gerrymandering, which is the case with the folks who are on the no side, or you can listen to folks like the League of Women Voters. We've been taking on gerrymandering on behalf of voters here in Ohio, in the courts, at the ballot box, and we support this because we know that finally it will end partisan gerrymandering.
How many organizations are behind Citizens Not Politicians at this point?
Thank you. We have hundreds of organizations from across the political spectrum, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. We have faith leaders, public service unions, nonpartisan groups like the League and Common Cause, civil rights groups. It is widely supported. And in terms of the fundraising, that gentleman is a green card holder. And so there's no compliance concern here. But since then, since there have been concerns and HB1 was passed, none of us are taking money from green card holders at this time.
Yeah, there's a legal fight right now over whether green card holders can donate to issue campaigns in Ohio. There was a law passed. It's challenged in the courts. We're going to have to wait and see. I will say, as far as Weiss is concerned, I couldn't figure out whether he's a green card holder, so I'll tell you what I could find. In 2014, Weiss told the media that he only carried a Swiss passport and did not have a U.S. green card. But as of 2021, the New York Times reported that he hadn't disclosed whether he had citizenship or permanent residency. He does live in Wyoming. He has a couple hundred acre ranch. He also has a winery in California, a like nature preserve. He is rich, rich. He owns a lot of property in the United States, and he lives here. His exact citizenship is not completely clear, at least as far as I could figure out. But the point of the matter is that he isn't living in Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, so the League, of course, opposes foreign money. But someone who lives in the United States and donates to a fund is something very different. And again, remember that the campaign has hundreds, probably now thousands of small donor dollars, donating $2, $5, $10. Also keep in mind that the League and Common Cause had 3,000 volunteers in the field collecting about a quarter of the signatures we turned in. This is by and for Ohio citizens.
When we all go vote in the next couple of weeks, the language on our ballot is going to say that this amendment mandates gerrymandering. The majority on the court said that this is because the board's use of the term gerrymander is consistent with the dictionary definitions and how the United States Supreme Court has used the term. It does not mislead, deceive, or defraud voters. So let's talk about that language that we're all going to see. What is your reaction to the court's decision to keep the language? What do you make of it saying it's going to mandate gerrymandering?
Right. So the Ohio Supreme Court and the Ohio Ballot Board are all politicians. So let's not get confused here that this is about politicians protecting their power. The ballot board passed grotesquely misleading and inaccurate language to the and I really have faith in the people of Ohio that they're going to see through this. We saw the ballot board try to confuse voters last August and in the fall, and voters behaved in a very different way. So, but again, keep in mind that citizens, not politicians, would actually ban politicians and lobbyists from drawing the maps. It takes power away from politicians. So surprise, surprise, that politicians are trying to put their thumb on the scale through the ballot board.
It's also going to be a very long amendment. It's going to take up like multiple pages on our ballots.
Yeah. And again, what's on the ballot is not the amendment. This is the very deceptive language. It doesn't change what the amendment is. What voters are voting for is banning politicians and lobbyists. It's banning gerrymandering. But you're right. It will be a long description. However false it is, it's a long description on the ballot.
And if you want to read the actual ballot language, we're going to have it linked with this story for this episode up on WOSU.org. And you can also find it where, Jen?
citizensnotpoliticians.org.
And I recommend that everyone take a moment, actually sit through it, read it. I know it's complicated. It uses like legalese, but it's important to sit down with the actual language and look through it and decide what you think.
I want to push back. Complicated, I'm not sure is the right language. It's detailed. It's thorough. I like to think of it like we're trying to protect voters from corruption, kind of like how we try to protect people in cars, right? You don't have one thing. It's not just your seatbelts. It's not just anti-lock brakes. It's not just airbags. It's an entire system. This is thoughtful and thorough to make sure that we truly end gerrymandering. So if we're going to protect Ohioans from corruption, we're going to need a really thoughtful proposal to do so.
And this is the place where I remind you that if you want to vote for or against Issue 1, the deadline to register to vote is October 7th. If you are not registered, you will not be able to vote on Election Day.
And check your registration. Sometimes you might not have realized that you moved and didn't update it, or you could have been removed from the rolls.
My final question for you is, what is your elevator pitch to voters out there? Why should Ohioans vote yes on Issue 1?
We are calling on every Ohioan to vote yes on Issue 1. Our coalition involves Republicans, independents, and Democrats. It will end gerrymandering by empowering citizens, the everyday people of Ohio, not politicians or lobbyists, to draw fair legislative districts in an open, transparent process. Voting yes restores power to where it belongs, with the people of Ohio, not politicians.
That was Ohio League of Women Voters President Jen Miller.
Thank you.
Now it's up to all of you, the people of Ohio, to decide how you want our districts drawn. If you missed any of the episodes in this Untangled series, you can find them online at WOSU.org, or you can find them in our podcast feed, Untangled. We actually have our own podcast feed if you search for Untangled in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. You can also find us in the All Sides podcast feed, and you can find us online at Twitter, WOSU All Sides, and Instagram, All Sides WOSU. I want to thank everyone who made this podcast series, or this radio series, if you're listening live here on 89.7 NPR News, possible this season. Our senior producer, Marcus Charleston, our producer, Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, our intern producers, Kira Kadar, Chris Corcoran, and David Stein. Video production is by the Ohio Channel. Board operation is by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. WOSU Radio Chief Content Director is Mike Thompson. 89.7 Program Director Amy Jurovitz, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, and Senior Broadcast Director Dalton Jones. Again, early voting starts October 8th. Thank you all so much for listening to All Sides on Untangled on 89.7 NPR News.